Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio with Stone Payton and John Baker. John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. And now, get ready for Biz Rocket Radio. Here's Stone Payton and John Baker.
Welcome to Biz Rocket Radio. This is John Baker. We welcome you once again this week to a great session of Biz Rocket, where we get a chance to chat with executives that work here in the Atlanta area that are either business owners or executives here. And in fact, today we've got a visitor from Denver, Colorado, but I know Molly works a lot here in the Atlanta area, and we've had a chance to meet in the past. So we've got a great show for you this morning. Our first guest is Molly Wendell, and Molly is the president of Executives Network. So Molly, welcome in.
Oh, thank you, John.
How was the flight from Denver?
It was great. I met a few people on the plane.
Nice.
So, there we go. In security, so it worked out.
Nice. So we got our networking 101 on the plane.
Right.
So that's what we're going to learn about today. So how's the weather out there in Denver?
You know, I think it's cooler than it is here, so.
Starting to chill out a little bit?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. Any snow in the mountains yet?
Yes.
Really?
Last weekend.
Come on.
Freezing.
Wow.
So, and I just moved there from Phoenix, which, you know, the temperature is like double in Phoenix compared to Denver, so.
Yeah.
It's an adjustment.
Wow. So why Colorado?
That's where our business is. So a couple years ago, I merged my company with another company, and they were based in Colorado. So we agreed to put our headquarters out in Denver.
Perfect. Well, before we get into all that, maybe you could give us a little bit of background, Molly, on kind of how you came to start working with Executives Network and your background.
Well, so I spent about 15 years in technology and commercial real estate, now 10 years with IBM Corporation, and I used to run corporate marketing, and I loved it. And then one day I found myself looking for a position, looking for a job, and I was in the job search for 2 years and 3 days, and
wow.
It was not easy.
Not good.
I mean, it was really hard. And one day during that time frame, I thought, you know what, I must be doing things wrong because I'm not getting the offers, I'm not getting the interviews. And so I changed everything up. In 90 days, I had 60 meetings and 30 offers. And I thought, this job search thing is much easier than it looks if you just go about it differently with a different approach. And during that time, I had been working with some executives, been involved with some other executives who were also in the job search. And we kind of formed a group. And when I finally landed a job, I thought, this group is too important to let go. So I'm going to continue the group. And I kept it going even while I was working. And then one day I realized I was doing something that was the most boring thing I'd ever done in my life. So I quit that job and decided to go full time to help executives in the job search build their networks and land their next job.
And obviously it's been lots of opportunities out there with all the layoffs going on in the last, you know, 3 years, really since 2008. It's been kind of crazy. How's business been? Is it been good, bad, and different?
So it's interesting because we've been doing this. I've been doing this for 9 years now, and I initially thought, well, what are we going to do when everyone lands a job?
Yeah.
And then I realized the reality is there will always be people who are looking for a job, whether they're currently working and looking for a job, or whether they're actively unemployed and looking for a position. And so over the last 9 years, it's kind of cyclical. The economy's been good. The economy's been bad. But the reality is there's still a need for executives to come together and help each other build relationships, get ideas, leads, ideas, and contacts for their job search.
And when do executives need to be thinking about this? Is it like, hey, the kind of the writing's on the wall, I better start kind of ramping up my network again, or wait till after they get the the escort out the front door? When do you start kind of working on this networking piece?
Well, they need to be thinking about it yesterday, really. I think there's kind of three kinds of people. There are people who are actively looking. They're unemployed currently, so they're definitely out there connecting. There are there's another kind of person that is kind of 1 foot out the door. They'd be interested in looking at something if the right opportunity came along. And then the third kind of person is working at the company heads down, and some of those people have no idea that they have 1 foot out the door because the company wants to have them have 1 foot out the door.
Right, yep.
So it's I think people need to be always on guard and always looking and always open. But there's a difference between being open to the idea of a job coming along and really stepping back and thinking about what do I want to do? What do I being proactive versus reactive? What do I really want to do in my life, in this job, in the next job, and how to proactively go about building a plan to proactively go about and land their next job on their terms versus someone else's terms?
So kind of building that runway before it's really needed.
Right, right. I talk about building the well before you need the water.
Okay,
so,
well, good.
Yeah.
So tell us a little bit more about the company. How does it work? What do you guys do?
So Executives Network is essentially a membership organization, and we have actually a couple different areas. One is focused for executives on the job search, and the reality is there's thousands of other executives who have been in the job search who want to help others in the job search. And so as members, they can come into the network and search and get contacts and leads from people who have already been in a job search themselves. And I don't know if you've been in a job search lately, but people who have been in a job search are more helpful than people who haven't, as a hasty generalization.
Yeah.
And I think it's because they know what it's like. They know how hard it is. I mean, it's just not easy. And there's many people who are friends and family who can feel bad for you and share your sorrow, but they really don't know how to help you. It's the people who've been in a similar situation who usually provide the most support and the most help and help you advance the ball in your job search.
Does it matter how fresh that wound is?
No, it doesn't.
So once you've been through the transition, you remember it and you're a much better source than someone who actually hasn't been through it.
Absolutely. Yes.
Interesting. Interesting. So how would they get started? I mean, what would they do to get started with Executives Network?
Well, a couple things. We have meetings here in Atlanta, monthly meetings. So they could come to a meeting or they could just call our office and say, I want to get involved. We also do webinars every month. And there are different job search webinars. They talk about the interview, networking, creating trackable resumes, really how to different coaching things on job search. And then also we do a coaching call once a month, a national coaching call once a month. And people, if they have any questions on anything, they just call in and we help them. If they need leads or contacts, we help them with that. And then we have two other organizations that are, and right now we don't have these groups in Atlanta, but they're for employed executives. So one of my biggest challenges years ago was once someone would land, I had no forum for them to connect with or to continue to build those relationships. And the worst thing they'd say is, thanks so much, Molly. I never want to see you again. Wow, thanks a lot.
Thanks. Bye.
Yeah. Hope I never see you again either. So I merged the company a couple of years ago with another company that did events and networking and building relationships with employed executives. And so now we have a place for executives to go, whether they're working or not working. We've got a forum in which they can connect and build those relationships. So that's another part of the organization. But we don't have the employed executives group here in Atlanta yet.
Mm. So if somebody's going to get involved, what would their experience been? They walk in the door, they've never been to this place again. They said, I heard this great woman, Molly, on the radio show, best radio show in Atlanta, by the way.
Absolutely.
And I came. What are they going to expect to see?
What they're going to expect is it's a very structured approach. They're going to sit down, and there's no speakers, there's no sponsors, there's no vendors. It's all about them. And so we sit in a room, we go around the table, and we say, who are you, what are you looking for, and how can the group help? And the goal is for them to walk out with a page of contacts that they can follow up with to advance the ball in their job search. So if they are focused in their job search and they talk about their background, the position they desire, the industries they're targeting, the locations they're targeting, company size, and specific target companies, and then they talk about that, and then we start collaborating with them on different ideas for getting connected to the right people. The reality is 95% of the jobs out there are found through networking, and so it's something's crazy. There's a crazy phenomenon that's been going on for the last couple of years, is all of a sudden people think that the approach to getting a job has changed. And they think that I'm supposed to go on the online and look at the job boards, and that's how I'm supposed to get a job because of the internet. And the reality is nothing's changed. Nothing's changed from 10 years ago, 15 years ago. The way you used to find jobs 15 years ago was through networking and through connecting and referrals. And that's still the way 95% of the people find jobs, or 80%, whatever the number is. It's a huge number.
Yeah.
And so that's what we're all about, is focusing on the big part of the pie of how to get them connected with the 85%, 90% of people who can help them land their next position.
So are there qualifications to come to the meeting, or is there certain levels that you're looking for?
So it's just director, VP, or C-level. And the real, sometimes you can be a VP at a small company and not have a lot of responsibilities. Sometimes you have huge responsibilities as a VP of a small company. The big thing is people who've managed organizations and managed functions.
Yeah. So if they come to this meeting, they get a list of contacts, people that they can follow up with, and then they kind of do that, and then the next meeting they come, do they do it again?
Yeah, they do it again. And it's different every meeting because there's different people in the room every time, and therefore different networks in the room every time. So the people that you know might be different than the people that I know, and so when you come in the room, that person is exposed to a whole new set of contacts. And it's funny because we'll have people come, and it might be their fifth time there, and they get more leads and ideas on their fifth time than they do on their third time. And it's just because of the dynamic in the room. So because the dynamic in the room changes every time, it's a different meeting.
Yeah, it sounds very proactive in terms of, instead of sitting in a meeting, listening to a bunch of stuff, shaking some hands, and 5 minutes with him, 5 minutes with him, 5 minutes with her, and then you walk with maybe one or two cards that you follow up with afterwards. You're actually getting directly to what it is that you're looking for.
It's very laser focused.
Yeah, you get rid of all the nonsense,
and
right?
Actionable. Huh. And it's funny because sometimes in other cities when we've run a little late, I was worrying that we were running late on people's time, and I apologized. And someone came up to me afterward and said, you know what? This is the single best use of my time and probably everyone in the room's time all day. So if this meeting went on all day, it would be good for all of us. Hmm. So,
how many people do you typically have attend the meetings?
It ranges. It's anywhere from, sometimes there's a small group of five, sometimes it's 20. It just kind of ranges. In other cities, we'll have up to 40.
And do you have to? Have you ever had to cut it off and say, okay, no more? Yeah,
no.
I can't have anybody else. No more people.
We almost did one time. We had, I think, 55 or 60
Whoa.
People.
And everybody has to.
Everybody gets a turn.
Wow.
And it's 2.5 hours whether, you know, they get it. And it was fast. It was too many people. And I think if that ever happened again, we'd just split it into two groups and we'd be good.
Yeah.
But so the key is when you have a smaller group, you get to go deeper with each person. When you have a bigger group, you have more contacts, so there's value there, but you don't get to go as deep with each person.
And then you have online stuff that you're doing also. People can go online to a website, and how does that work?
Well, I have a blog that there's tips and techniques and a lot of things from my book as well, The New Job Search. And then mostly the online stuff is the database, the searching, connecting with people, and then listening to the webinars or the replays of the webinars, past webinars, things like that.
Okay, so the webinars are kind of where people can go and get
education
on things that maybe they're interested in, and the meetings are strictly for just pure networking.
Correct.
Yeah. So what kind of, one of the things that we talked about is breaking the rules in job search. What examples do you have in rules that are effectively broken in job search nowadays?
I think one of the biggest rules to break is people think that just because a position isn't posted, you know, don't think that just because a position isn't posted, the company isn't hiring. I mean, people are out there looking at job boards and saying, well, why would I target that company? They're obviously not hiring. And I say, well, how do you know? Well, they didn't have a position posted. Well, okay, maybe what they really need to hire is a web designer to, or a content manager to put the position up on the web. You know, how do you know?
Right.
And the other thing is that there's lots of companies that are making hiring decisions after they meet the right person. They're thinking of a new division, a new area, and once they meet the right person, then they can start that, but they're not going to go proactively do that. There's another thing is sometimes they're replacing a current role, someone who's in the role currently, and you can't post that without some serious internal problems.
Yeah.
So there's lots of opportunity, and I really try to get people to focus on, just tell me, who do you want to work for? In a perfect world, who would be the greatest company you could work for? Where do you want to be? Instead of again, that reactive, proactive, instead of who's hiring and where can I fit myself in? One of the worst things I hear people say is, oh, I'd be willing to work there. And I say, willing to work there? Is that what you want them to say about you? We'd be willing to have you come on board. You know, like, okay, break my arm, you know. Yeah. So it's more about them really being proactive and not worrying about who they believe is hiring. The other big thing of what I would say is breaking the rules, the current rules of this internet, is turn off the computer. Just get outside. Go meet people. That's how I got 90 meetings and 30 offers, is I met people. I didn't get them online. And the more I sat online, the more lonely, depressed, and sad I was, because you'd send out these resumes and nobody responds. You know, you send it into a black hole and you have no idea what's going on, that nobody calls you back. And it's very frustrating. We just did a webinar on creating a trackable resume, which is fascinating, of how to basically get rid of the black hole. And it's pretty cool.
To know what happens to the resume after
you
send it.
And you can track it. Yeah. And you can know who opens it and who doesn't. And what links they're going through, and it kind of demystifies that black hole. But short of that, people just need to get out and connect and meet with people. And so those are a couple of things that I say, you know, break the rules on what you perceive as the current job search.
And when you said kind of getting depressed and being in front of the computer, and so Nykl, who's our next guest, shook his head. Nykl, have you had that kind of process or feeling that you've gone through?
No, yeah, exactly. And so one of the things that I was thinking about when Molly said that was, you know, you do have to get out, you have to network, and you have to meet people. And that's the key to creating your next opportunity. It's not really about, you're not going to find these things posted on a website somewhere, or even if you do see these jobs posted, they're going to be jobs that are internally written for candidates internal to the company. And you may not even know what that opportunity is. So you have to get out and talk to people to find out and discover what the company is looking for, how you can add value to the company, and how you can get out of it what you need.
I totally agree. When we did the mic check, I didn't realize that Nykl's voice was such a radio voice.
I know, it's fantastic.
Isn't that booming kind of deep radio voice? I might need a sidekick.
I'm available.
Are you available?
No, Nykl. You're interested, but you'd like to discuss.
Not willing. Willing is bad.
And here's the interesting thing. So Nykl, probably on paper, his voice is rather flat, right?
You can't really tell, yeah.
But in person, you're an in-person person or a voice person, so you've got to be out there connecting with people, and people have a greater impression of you.
Well, that's my strength, actually, I think. But, you know, when I say I'm available, what I'm telling you is that I'm available to sit down and talk. Let's just talk. And out of that talk, a whole slew of opportunities may open up.
All right, so this is good stuff. So I'm going to run with a question that I have, but I'm going to kind of pose it to both of you guys. Now, Molly, I'll start with you. When you're dealing with structured networking, these meetings that you can go to, and everyone's there for the same reason. That's obviously one form of networking that I think is a little easier for people, because everyone knows, why they're there. But what about the informal, the casual networking? How do you do it? How do you become a good informal networker?
The first thing that you need to do is be aware. be there and aware when there are networking opportunities all around you, and to be aware of what's going on is critical. I think about, I fly a lot. I love to fly. I get to the airport. I'm so excited every time I'm about to get on the plane. I'm just thrilled to be going somewhere, you know. And I think
you're very abstract. There are not too many people. I'm like, yeah, let's go fly.
But yeah, it's funny, but the people I meet are fantastic and fascinating and very interesting. And I think part of it is my persona is I'm excited to be there. And so you've got to be wherever you are excited to be there. And it's the attitude you bring to the table. So that's one. And I think about when you fly, you know, I meet someone in line at security because there's always a line. So you can meet someone there, and then you can meet someone in the waiting area before the plane, and then you can meet the person sitting next to you on the plane, and then you can meet the person as you're standing to get your luggage off the plane, and then as you're walking to baggage claim, you can meet another person. I mean, there's so many opportunities to meet people, and people aren't there because their head's down and they don't, they're not enjoying themselves. And so you've got to first of all, kind of be appreciative of life. And it can be, and it's really about being aware is starting off with asking questions. So, you know, are you coming or going? I have a funny story. I was traveling from Los Angeles to Phoenix. And I sat next to someone and I thought, you know what? I think this guy's famous. I'm just not sure. And so I start talking to him and I ask the same question I ask everyone on the plane. Are you coming or going? Are you going to work? Are you going home? And he said, well, I'm going to work. And I said, oh, what do you do? And he said, I'm in the movies. And I thought, oh my gosh, this guy's definitely famous, but I can't figure out who it is. So then I said, how long have you been in the movies? And he said about 50 years. And I'm like, okay,
I better know.
I'm an idiot. Yeah. So I'd say when I don't know what to say, I say this. I say, wow, do you love it? And he goes, I absolutely love it. I go, that's great. How'd you get involved? How'd you get into it? And he starts telling me the story of how he was in playing football at Michigan. And as he puts it, they sent him home in a body bag after his freshman year. And he went back to New York and he started taking acting classes at NYU. And he really enjoyed it. So about 20 minutes into the conversation, I realize I'm sitting next to James Caan. And I think, wow, that's a good networking contact.
So, let's keep this conversation
right.
going.
Yeah. But it's whether you're sitting next to James Caan or whether you're sitting next to Chaka Khan, I don't know, someone not famous,
yeah.
You need to be asking questions and getting them involved. You know, the old Dale Carnegie, the more people talk about themselves, the more they like you.
Mm-hmm.
How to Win Friends and Influence People. And it's really about that. You get them to talk about themselves. You get to learn about other people and what they're doing and where they're going. And you start to build that relationship. And you're not going to get real deep on any one initial conversation, but you'll start somewhere. And I think sometimes people forget that you have to start somewhere before you can get deep.
Yeah. Well, Nyquil, are you a natural networker?
Yeah, I think so. And I think a lot of what Molly's saying is very, very true. One of the things that she said, one of the key words she said there was, you have to be aware of where you are and the surroundings around you. And as I traveled through Africa on this last assignment that I was on, that's one of the key things that you have to have. You have to have that awareness. And you have to stop and you have to talk to people. Don't be intimidated. Don't be afraid to. Just talk to them because they all have some part of information to give you that could potentially save your life when you're traveling around, especially in these emerging markets. So it really is critical. And I find that I am much better when I'm talking with people than sitting behind a terminal and, you know, trying to do something. It's like, let's get on a call. Let's meet somewhere. Let's just interact. And then you always find another piece of information you can go off of.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the way I live it.
And there's probably people out there who say, you know what, I'm not a natural networker. I don't naturally like to talk to people. I'm not outgoing. And so there's a couple things that people like that, sometimes people like that are the best networkers and best at relationship building because they don't do all the talking, whereas people who are more outgoing tend to do a little more talking. So the people who are more of, if they consider themselves introverts, then they just need to come up with their good list of questions of how to start the conversation and do it the same way every time, because then with practice, you know, makes permanence and helps you with making it make it feel like a very natural flow.
So if you were to think about your top five questions. And Nykl, get ready because I'm going to come to you next.
Okay.
Top five questions to get and keep a conversation going. We got one of them. Are you coming or going?
Yeah.
Right at an airport. What
so,
else?
So that's on the plane. Are you coming or going? So when I meet someone at anywhere, so what do you do? And where do you work?
Okay.
And how long have you been there?
Okay.
And where did you work before that?
All right.
And how long have you been there? And where did you work before that?
Wow.
And how
so
long
you're just
did you
going
been?
Backwards.
And I'm going back about 10 years of work history. And the reason I'm doing that is, you know the Verizon commercial where the guy has that network behind him?
Yeah.
Well, everybody has a network behind them. And my job is to figure out what your network looks like. And so I start with kind of, who is this person? You know, who might they know? And who might they know that I need to know? So I start with, it's amazing, someone who's been at a company for 6 months is the greatest person to talk to. Oh my gosh, well, what were you doing before that? Oh, I was at this company. Well, how long were you there? 2 years. Oh, well, where were you before that? And then you hear that they changed industries. And then you go, wow, what compelled you to join that company? Or what compelled you to change industries? You know, and you find out a lot of information about them as well as who they know. And it's not...
It almost sounds probing. It almost sounds like you're going, well, God, what am I on an interview show here? You know, radio? It is Rocket Radio. This is life.
It's a little bit of probing, but it's all in your reaction,
yeah.
And it's all how you work it. You, if you're just very methodical, and where were you before then? And where were you? Then it feels
but like
probing.
When you say it, it's almost exciting. It's almost like, wow, really? That's so awesome.
Yeah.
Why did you do that? You know, and how did you come to that conclusion?
It's funny. I was sitting next to a guy on the plane a couple of years ago, and about an hour into our two-hour flight, he said, I feel like I have a light on me, and I'm in the interrogation room. I go, oh, my gosh, I'm so sorry. And he said, well, when do I get to ask you a question? I said, well, I'm so sorry. Just one more question. And so I asked him another question, and that lasted the rest of the flight. And he never asked me a single thing about me, which was fine because I already knew me. And I'm the one person I don't need to know anything more about. So if I can learn more about other people, that's great. But then after the flight, he emailed me and said, hey, you know, I just don't really feel like you can get to know someone on a two-hour flight. So what I've done is I've attached an 8-page interview that I did with this company and thought that it might help you to get to know me better. And I'm laughing, going, that's fantastic. And some people might think, well, what a jerk. And I'm thinking, no, that's great because I want to know people. And I'm genuinely, I think that's the other big thing is you have to be genuine. You have to be genuinely interested in people and interested in what's going on with other people. And I think that genuineness comes across when mm-hmm. When it doesn't feel authentic, then it comes across as probing.
Yeah. So, all right, Nykl, I'm going to come back. I got like five other questions just popped in my head. But Nykl, how about you? Top five to kind of start conversations or keep them going?
Well, you know, the first thing I do when I get to a place that I'm just foreign to and I don't know, you know, when you're implementing global technology, one of the key things you need to be able to do is stop things and slow it down and listen. Listen to what the needs of the people are that you're trying to help. Listen to what the needs of the customer is. Understand what their pain points are. So when I step out of an airport terminal into a strange place I've never been in my life, and everything is just moving at this incredible pace, you sit down and you slowly and you look around the room and you see who's talking to whom, and you figure out who you need to talk to, and then I ask questions. I ask for help. I say, I'm going to this hotel. What do you think about it? And they'll say, I know this place. You know, it's okay, but there's a better place you should be. Or, you know, I'll talk to somebody else and I'll say, well, you know, I think I need some transport. How do I get to this place? Who do I need to, you know, who's the best person to take me there? And they'll say, you need to go this way. And so you get pointers along the way. You handle that the same way you handle business. When you're working in these foreign and emerging markets, when you're trying to implement global IT, you sit down and you talk to the customer and you say, you know, we have this technology. It will work. There's no doubt about it. But what do we need to do for you to make sure that we're successful in this implementation?
Mm-hmm.
And the customer will tell you. The customer will sit there and say, you know, we have basic problems with health. We have basic problems, you know, taking care of our population. We need to collect information so that we can help people, so that we can advance their lives. And we know this technology will work, but it's not going to work here the way you think because of the way we use it. And so you get that kind of information through these kinds of conversations, and they're just casual conversations.
And I know from just your bio, and we're going to certainly go into more background because I want our listeners to know more about you. Nichols had a tremendous amount of travel experience and working in Africa for many years. And it sounds like the skill sets that you learned just traveling and being open to asking questions and for help almost is almost a natural correlation in some of the networking stuff that you might be doing, you know, to kind of build that network.
Absolutely. I mean, when you're in this search and when you're thinking about looking for your next opportunity, it's almost like you have to create your own reality. You know, you say, what is it that I really want to do next? Where do I want to target? You're not saying, I'm just going to take any opportunity that comes. You say to yourself, here's the place that I want to be. Now, what do I want that picture to look like? When I accepted the opportunity to go work in Africa, I had no idea anything about the continent. I traveled all the other continents basically around the world, working in worldwide jobs, but I'd never been on the continent of Africa. I accepted the position, and I went to Johannesburg, South Africa, and I totally had no concept of what it was going to be like to work in these markets. And then from there, you know, you think about it, and you say, oh my God, so here I am on the continent of Africa. I've got to position myself. I've got this huge job that I need to be doing, which is really influencing governments to adopt technology across multiple governments, multiple geography, time zones, culture, all sorts of issues that you have to deal with just before you get to technology. And so I said to myself, you know, when you're thinking about this next job and when you're thinking about this next way that you're going to move forward, you really have to kind of position yourself to be totally open to anything that comes. And then you have to say to yourself, okay, I've got this job I need to do. Let me sit down and break it down into parts. Let me slow it down. And now let me implement these small parts until I get the big job done. Yeah, that's where you look at it.
I know. I think it's interesting, Nichols' questions. They really appeal to people's desire to help others. And so it's a basic fundamental of humans is everybody wants to help someone. They just don't know it yet. And so giving people an opportunity to help you is a really big thing, not only in job search, but in connecting and networking and building those relationships. People love to help people.
Yeah. Let me ask about your book, because I know that I think this is a most recent book, right?
Yes.
You've written another one as well.
I'm writing another one.
You're writing another one. So tell us about the new job search.
Well, it's all about the new job search, break all the rules, get connected, and get hired faster for the money you're worth. And it's all about...
It's a really long title.
I know, but that's it, like the tagline.
I got you. Title and tagline, I got it.
The new job search searches well on Google, so it sounds really good. So it's all about how to get connected and how to land your next job. And it's interesting because people who have read it, they not only read it once, but they read it two or three times, and they end up using it as a reference book. They say, oh my gosh, I'm going to a networking function. What do I do? I'm going to a job search function. What do I do? I'm going to an interview. What do I do? I'm writing a thank you letter. How do I write it? And so it's full of practical tips and techniques on finding and landing your next job. And ask some tough questions. It's very direct and humorous. And someone said, I didn't know you were so funny. And you're much nicer in person. I thought, oh gosh, sorry.
Wow, I don't know what that meant.
I don't know what to say. Thank you. Oh, buy another book.
Yeah.
So it's real practical tips, and it's a quick read, and it's more of a reference book. It comes back. People read it and they come back to certain areas based on where they are in their job search. So I know there's a lot of, the last thing I wanted to do was publish a book that was 600 pages long on the job search. And there's a lot of those out there, and they're not fun to go through. I mean, they make job search about as fun as a root canal, you know? So this is about being excited about your job search, being proactive about your job search, and really being actionable about your job search. And that's what it's all about.
What reactions have you gotten to the book that's been your biggest surprise? The thing that people either liked or commented about that you had no idea it was going to impact them?
You know, there are... What I was surprised about was the people who consider themselves very good networkers and people who are good at building relationships. They said, I can't believe how much I've learned and how much I was doing it wrong. And that, to me, was the biggest surprise is... is I think the people who don't think they're good at it and the people who do think they're good at it still need help.
Mm-hmm.
So that was probably, I was telling someone the other day, I'm constantly surprised at how much help people really need in the basics. And it's the little impressions that all work together to make a big impression. And people are missing out on the big impression because they're forgetting all these little impressions along the way.
Yeah.
And basic fundamentals. You don't learn this type of thing in school ever. You don't learn it at home.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So where are you going to learn it? You're going to learn it in the book.
Yeah. Good. Perfect. Okay. So, Molly, last question is your pearl of wisdom for our listeners. What would you like to share as a pearl of wisdom?
Can I share three pearls of wisdom?
Well, you can, but you got to take one of... No.
Okay. Well, I just wanted to mention one thing before I share my pearl of wisdom. How about that?
And
I think it's about what people need to keep in mind when they're in the job search. And one of it is that idea of being proactive, not reactive. The other thing, and my sixth grade teacher used to say, to be specific is terrific, to be vague is the plague. And it's so true in job search. The more specific you are, the more terrific you are. The more you are, hey, I just want a job at a great company that has an excellent holiday party and that treats employees well. Well, it's really hard to find that job because we can't figure out how to help you. So you need to be specific and focused. And people worry too much. Well, if I'm too focused, I'm going to miss out on all these opportunities. But the reality is, if you don't focus, there never will be an opportunity. So that idea of being specific and terrific, not vague and the plague. And then the other thing that people must make sure they do is quit making everything about a job search. They lead with their resume. They lead with everything about a job. And they're forgetting that it's through relationships that you find the opportunities. So if every person you get connected with, you're leading with your resume, you're making everything about a job search. And if they're not hiring that day for you, for your role, game over, relationship over. So step back and start making everything about a relationship. Jobs will come when you make things about relationships. Your relationships won't come when you make everything about a job. And so the pearl of wisdom I would say is have faith. You know, have faith that sometimes you're not getting the things because you're not meant to. And the right thing is around the corner. You just don't know which corner it might be or how long it might take to get to that corner. But really have faith that there's opportunity there for you. And you have to do your job and do the work. But have faith that the right thing will come. And sometimes when you miss out on opportunities, it's for a reason. So.
All right. Well, Molly, thank you very much. One other question I had in terms of contact. So, number one, do you have another meeting? When's the next meeting in Atlanta scheduled?
The next meeting, it's always the second Tuesday of the month.
Okay.
So then upcoming one is in November. Yeah.
Second Tuesday in November. And where?
It's at the Residence Inn on Barfield Road.
Okay. And would they, if they want to join, if they want to go, how
do they go to executivesnetwork.com, and that's executives with an S and network without an S.com. And all the information, the upcoming meetings are right on the front page.
Okay.
And then the information on my blog is right on that front page as well.
All right. And book? If somebody wants to get a hold of the book?
It's available on Amazon. Just the new job search, Molly Wendell. And that's Wendell.
All right.
And it's also available on Kindle. So people want to download it too.
Technology. So into our technologist.
All right.
So our next guest is... Nickel Woodward, and Nickel is a technologist with all sorts of international experience, and obviously we've heard from you a little bit before, but maybe you could tell us a little bit of background, Nickel, on kind of where you came from and how you got here.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. So I refer to myself as a technologist simply because in the field of technology, it can take so many different flavors, so many different varieties of work that you can do. And you can go as an executive, you can go as a deliverer of technology, you can take a lot of different approaches. I was raised in Savannah, Georgia, to the family of a military family, so got travel early on in my life. And started out in technology at the very beginning. You know, when I was young, I saw a magazine, Popular Electronics. They featured this computer on the front of it, a home computer that you could build yourself.
Don't tell which one it was.
I won't tell which one it was. I won't date myself. But in any case, And I got excited about technology then. My mother wanted me to be a doctor. My father wanted me to be a statesman. I actually started out in pre-medicine, to be honest with you. And so I started working in that vein. But I switched midstream. I knew inside of me what I wanted to do was work in technology. And so I went in and got a major in computer engineering and finished up in computer engineering. Now, what I was going to do with computer engineering from that point on was kind of a mystery because early on, so, you know, a lot of people weren't working in technology. But what I found was that there's so many applications for technology, so many things you can do with it, that it's just, it continues to be an exciting career. And so I moved on from there to basically start working in the aerospace industry. And as I think about what I did with the career and what I did with my knowledge, you know, what I learned in school, I kind of separated it into two halves. I look at it in the first half of my career that I, you know, since I've been working, as working in the corporate environment. And really taking a focus on understanding organizations and how people and organizations function together. The second half of the career was all about consulting and engaging globally and working out technology paradigms that you learned in these corporate organizations to apply them in the real world. And that's what I do today. I essentially take technology at its base form and make it easy to understand and then apply it. And that's what essentially the work I was doing in Africa was in a country and or in a continent, you know, you can take country for the countries we worked in, but in a continent where it's so diverse, there's so many different rich applications for technology, but the infrastructure, the basic human needs that aren't being met in this continent, it's difficult, right? So you have to think in terms of, you have to change your whole perspective. You have to shift out of your first world mindset into the mindset of where you are. And that's what I mean about being aware about where you are, because then and only then you can understand how to truly apply technology in its base form. So the work I was doing with Microsoft in sub-Saharan Africa was all about making sure that the software could be adopted and used in the continent. So in bids and RFPs and requests, there was a standardization process for software. And if it wasn't standardized on, Microsoft wouldn't be able to sell software in the continent.
Right.
Yeah, so I had to convince countries, standards boards in each one of these countries to adopt the software.
So you were a statesman.
I did. Actually, I fulfilled the second part of what my dad asked me to do because I was a statesman. As the African people referred to me in the media, they said, the Microsoft lobbyist. And I'm not so sure if I was really flattered by that, but that's the way they referred to me because I was always speaking and I was at engagements and I was talking to people and I was explaining to them, your software, the things that you do have to be interoperable so that you can communicate with the rest of the world. Everything is opening up, and Africa's poised to take advantage of this opportunity.
And when you went to Africa and you started getting entrenched in this culture and kind of how they worked, how long did it take you to kind of put the pieces together and figure out the answers that you needed to bring back or have for the company?
Well, when you work for Microsoft, you have very, very short timelines. So basically, you know, they put you into a job and they say, go do this. And you have a whiteboard.
Yeah.
It's an incredible company. They give you the resources that you need to get things done. But I had about 9 months to make all this come together and happen. I got on the ground in South Africa and I suddenly began to realize just how big the continent was and just how much I had to get out there and reach people. And so what I did basically was I did something totally out of the box. I contracted a PR firm in the continent. It's called Africa Practice. And Africa Practice had public relations specialists in each one of the countries that I needed to impact. So I got them to give me information in terms of the culture, the climate, what actually drives these conversations in each one of the countries. And they did the groundwork for me. And then what I did is I'd fly into these countries, I'd have my prepared speeches and presentations, I'd sit in front of the UN Commission in Ethiopia, and I'd give talks. And one by one, each one of the countries, it was amazing because out of all the regions in the world, Africa and the countries that voted, they all voted positive. No other region in the world did that.
You know, that's interesting. It's kind of to Molly's point about you know not necessarily shoving your resume in someone's face and saying, hey, here's the product, here's how great it is. but it's almost a backdoor approach at building that rapport and credibility.
You have to. It's all about a relationship in Africa. And it's that way all around the world. People work with people they like working with.
Mm-hmm.
If they like you, they'll work with you. They'll hear what you're saying. Now, it took a while, I'll be honest with you. I mean, because I had to cover a lot of ground, and I was, you know, I was moving from country to country. And the region spans not only the 53 countries in Africa, but it also goes out into the Indian Ocean. So I was in Mauritius, and I was in Madagascar, and it goes all the way up into French Polynesia. So the travel is rigorous, and my schedules were just horrendous. Trying to, you know, I got a funny story later I'll share with you about travel. But
you got to meet a lot of people on the plane.
I got to meet amazing. Molly, you need to come with me if you like to travel.
What because, a gold mine! Wow.
Yeah, because you do, and you the richness of it, and not only that, but you're sitting with heads of state, you're sitting with presidents of countries. You know, you're sitting with the president of Uganda one day, the president of Rwanda the next, and you're having these deep conversations that, you know, they're not that long. I mean, basically, the presidents are saying, what is this going to do for me? What is this going to do for the country? How can I collect health statistics? How can I understand how malaria is impacting the way our population is able to function?
Right.
And how can we eradicate that? Help me collect this data. And that's what we were doing,
mm-hmm.
you know, implementing these systems.
John, are you starting to get a picture of what Nichols Network looks like? It's fantastic.
Yeah, I know you are. She's like, I have lunch with this guy.
I'm salivating.
So yes, I mean, and she's right. I mean, I have this Rolodex, and I have this contact log that I maintain of contacts literally all over the world in many different functions across many different agencies and governments. And so, and I stay in touch with them. And still continuing to talk to Ghana, and I'm still continuing to talk to Kenya about different, you know, initiatives and things that we were working on.
So tell me, fascinating background. What do you see as being the next step for you? What do you want to do with the next piece of your life?
Well, it's funny. I mean, the work that I'm doing now in the consulting side of the business, I enjoy doing. I want to continue working with a global services or global delivery services organization. And I said to myself, you know, I was laughing the other day, I was talking with my wife, I said, you know, I've had an opportunity to work for the greatest software company in the world. And I think now I'm going to position myself to work for the greatest computer company in the world. And, you know, whatever that flavor takes, when I get to that organization, and when I decide what it is, and how I can add value to that organization, which I believe I can, then I'll create that reality in that position. And I think Molly's absolutely right. In today's job market, it's not about leading with your resume. It's really about coming in, having a conversation. When they meet that right person, the opportunity will surface.
Yeah.
When I decided that, and it's an interesting story about how I decided to go to Africa, the chairman for Microsoft Africa, we had a chairman, Sheikh Diarra, he's a statesman and he's absolutely an ambassador. I mean, he's a great guy and he's from Mali, which is my favorite country. Yeah, right below the sub-Saharan. I mean, it's right in the desert, but it's near, but a beautiful country. And he came to Seattle and he basically sat down with a group of executives there and he's saying, we need help. We need help in Africa. We need technologists. We need people to come and work with us. And he so empowered me with that conversation that I left the room and I said, you know what? I'm going to look for an opportunity. So I had to go back and I talked to my wife and I said, you know, I'm going to do an international assignment. Where would you like to go in the world? And I had a few other opportunities like Eastern Europe for emerging markets or South America, where I'd done some work down in Peru and Chile.
Yep.
And I said, you know, and she's like, you know, I've been to Singapore. You know, I've been to South America with you. Africa sounds interesting. So I set my sights on it. And then right after that, a job came up, which was a regional technology officer. Had no idea what the job did, but I went and I started talking to people. I got some executive sponsors, and we shaped the job into what it needed to be. And there's about 50 regional technology officers around the world in each geography or country. I was one of them for Africa, and then we have Mid East and Africa, and then we've got others all around the world. But I took the job and I said, okay, I have this position. It's a great responsibility, great opportunity. How can I add value back to Microsoft? And that's where we connected with, you know, the standardization project. That was the first phase. So that's what you do. I think you really do lead with the conversation of what it is you need to do. How does it add value to the company? And then the position will come.
With all the travels that you've had in the different countries that you've been to, I know for me, I'm not the travel. I don't have the travel bug like you guys do. I mean, networking stuff is great, but the travel bug, not so much. I get terrified of the whole language barrier thing. And a lot of people that are great travelers are like, no problem. You can always find someone that knows English and you can always kind of get by. But that would be my biggest fear. What's the reality of some of the difficulties of traveling to these, you know, far reaches of the world?
You know, it's not as bad as a lot of people think. It really isn't. And it's true. Anywhere you go, you can get somebody that speaks English, an interpreter, or somebody that can go along with you. In Africa, most everybody speaks English or they speak Swahili. And if you learn a few key words, you can navigate anywhere. And most people are willing to help you, you know, especially if you look lost. But it's important not to.
Another great opportunity for networking, right?
Yeah.
You know, they're asking for help. I'd be asking for help. I don't know what you're saying.
They love to practice their English with people who are native tongue and English speakers.
Really?
They love it. People will approach you, especially in countries where it's obvious you're not from there. They come up to you all the time. Oh, I know a little English. I'm thinking, if I knew that little Japanese, I'd be fluent, okay? So.
Yeah, it's true. And you know, like on the West Africa, they speak French. In Angola, they speak Portuguese. In Mozambique, they speak Portuguese. And so in those countries, it's a little dicey. But the key to it is you just connect yourself with somebody that does know the way. And that's important.
And on a business side, typically you're bringing a translator or an interpreter
with you. When you speak at the UN, it's very much like our setting here. You have headsets on. It's all interpreted for you. So, you know, there's no language barriers, basically.
So what would you say are some of the challenges that you really have faced?
Well, the challenges I think I really have faced in the continent is really around culture, really trying to really understand the culture and what motivates people to adopt technology. That's one of the real key challenges. The travel, of course, is another challenge. I mean, it's just the time zones. And, you know, when you think about it, from Johannesburg to the tip of Africa to get up to Istanbul is 12 hours on a flight.
Yeah.
You know, just tip to toe of Africa. Going east and west is almost impossible. And one time, I was in Ouagadougou, which is in Burkina Faso, which sits below Mali. And it's a small country, but a very, you know, a lot of ironworks and things like that there in the country. I finished a presentation, and my flight got canceled. My flight was supposed to go up to Paris and then drop back down to Johannesburg. And the next one was 2 days because they're every other day. The flights don't run every day.
Yeah.
And so I decided, I said, you know, I'm just going to get home. I got to get home. I'm tired of, you know, traveling because I'd been out for like about 2 weeks. And so I decided I was going to fly over Congo. I was going to fly a new route. I was going to go from Burkina Faso to Lagos, Nigeria, Lagos to Kinshasa in Congo. And what a mistake, because I got to Lagos and I got on this flight. There were no seatbelts really on the on the plane. The plane was old. The pilots weren't in uniform. I mean, it was.
You were going, whoa. I'd rather be on the ground right now.
But it was too late because they closed the door and they took off. And we got altitude and the back seals on the door popped open. And so we had to drop. And I could see trees, and I was like making a little note to my wife saying it's over, and I'll see you. And
give me reception.
Yeah. Well, you don't have to turn your phones off on those flights.
No, you don't have to worry.
They don't have flight attendants who will tell you.
But long story short, I got home. So,
wow.
But what an adventure that day.
What do you think is the proudest thing that you have that you took out of that experience or accomplishment in Africa?
You know, I think the proudest thing was getting the countries to understand what it meant to be connected to the rest of the world. When you think about it, they don't have a lot of infrastructure in terms of computer technology, you know, like the lines, you know, like cable lines and things that we have run here, fiber and those kinds of things. But what they do have is cellular technology, which they are using in a variety of very highly innovative ways.
Hmm.
In some ways, more advanced than here. Mobile payment systems, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Very advanced in Africa. And so getting them to understand how critical interoperability, security, and privacy was across the continent, I think is a huge accomplishment. We made a lot of inroads and a lot of progress there.
Hmm. Now, you mentioned a story that you're going to tell us earlier. What was that?
Well, I just told you the story about Congo.
Okay, I like the Congo story.
Yeah, and so, you know, and I mean, there's lots of other ones in Africa, but some not really not really worth sharing, but you know, but I think that, you know, overall, when you think about traveling in Africa, you know, you think about taking away a pearl of wisdom, the number one thing is you need to be aware of where you are at all times. You need to be aware of who you're traveling with. That's very, very important in Africa.
You need, how do you mean?
So what I mean by that is when you step off a plane, there's just a throng and a crush of people there right outside of the gates, or, you know, right outside of the airport. And when you step out of there, like, for, you know, in one of these cities, four or five people may be holding up a tent card with your name. And you could get taken away and, you know, robbed or whatever very, very quickly. So what you do, the first thing you do when you step off a plane is you slip in the local SIM. They sell them right there at the airport. And you call your driver. And then he'll hold up his hand. He'll say, oh, it's me. And the other guys kind of fall away because what they've done is they've copied your name from his tent card.
Yeah.
While he's waiting for you at the airport. So that's the first thing. You need to know who you're traveling with.
Right.
Because you can get lost.
Yeah.
Okay. And then you really kind of need to have a way mapped out of where you're going, what you're wanting to accomplish, and then how you're going to get home.
Right.
You know, that's the second thing.
Yeah.
And like I told you the story about Congo where I took an alternate route, I had no idea. When I actually got home and talked to my travel people, they said, that flight that you got on isn't even an authorized carrier.
No frequent flyer miles. I'm sorry.
You're right. It's not even an
alive.
Authorized carrier. Yeah, yeah. But we're glad you made it.
Wow.
You know, along those lines of being aware is you also need to have an expectation that things will go wrong.
Yeah.
And if they do, it's okay. Because too many people, if they expect everything to be perfect, especially when you're traveling internationally, they get disappointed. And if you expect everything won't go exactly the way you had planned initially, and you're okay with the, you don't react unfavorably to the minor inconveniences,
yeah, exactly.
It makes things a lot better.
You need to kind of embrace the controlled anarchy.
Yeah.
You have to be flexible and you have to be patient.
Yeah.
When you're traveling in those markets, I mean, things happen all the time. Flights get canceled. I was in Burundi once. We landed on the ground. The pilots basically ran out of fuel. There was no fuel for the flight. We saw a couple other flights leaving, like Air Ethiopia and some other ones headed out, but our flight wasn't flying. And the engineers were on strike, and they had to bring in another flight. I mean, it took almost 12 hours before we got another flight in.
Wow.
So that we could fly from Burundi to Rwanda, which is very close. I mean, you can drive there in about 3 or 4 hours, but the roads aren't good.
Yeah.
I mean, another story, basically, an adventure for my wife and I. When I changed my assignment from Johannesburg to Nairobi, my wife and I, we drove from Johannesburg to Nairobi, which is about 5,000 kilometers, about 3,500 miles of driving. And we drove through the countryside, you know, up through the Zambezi. We crossed the Zambezi on a raggedy little ferry. And then we moved on up through all of Zambia, which is about literally larger than the size of Texas. I mean, it's huge. And then we went into Malawi, and then we drove in Tanzania and then up into Kenya.
So 3,500 miles.
3,500
miles. How many days did it take you?
10 days.
10 days.
The roads were
terrible. It's like the roads cart and buggy.
Yeah, we had a Jeep. I mean, it's a commercial for a Jeep, but the car was amazing, and we needed a four-wheel drive. But then we saw people in little Hondas driving. And
they got skills.
Yeah, they had skills.
They got skills.
They knew the roads. I didn't.
But sometimes when you're in places like that, unexpected, interesting things happen. I was in Tanzania a few years ago, and the plane that we were supposed to take wasn't working. And so some guy had a plane, and so he took us. He said, I'll take you. And then I got to fly the plane. So little things like that happen.
Controlled anarchy.
How fun.
A little bit of controlled anarchy leads to interesting experiences.
That never happens on United.
Well, Molly, you're a handy person to have around.
I know.
Hey, I didn't say I was good.
We didn't crash, but I didn't fly it long.
Yeah,
so.
Right. Exactly.
Well, that's great stuff. So what I'd like to do is if, Nykyl, if you've got any contact information, if somebody wants to reach out to you and learn a little bit from your experiences or maybe have a chat with you, what's the best way to get in contact with you?
They can reach me through LinkedIn. My name is spelled Nicol, and my last name is Woodard, Woodard. They can connect with me there. Or they can just drop me an email at nicolw@msn.com,
okay.
and they can reach me there. I am operating under my consulting company, my local consulting company here, but the email is the best way to reach out.
Best way to reach out. Right. Okay. Well, Molly, Nichol, thank you very much for joining us today, and we appreciate your time. To our listeners, we appreciate your time in taking it out for this Wednesday afternoon or early morning. And until next week, be safe.
Thank you.
John Baker is a certified financial planner with a Master's of Science in Personal Financial Planning. Certified Financial Planner Board of Standards, Inc. owns the certification mark CFP, Certified Financial Planner, TM and CFP, and in the U.S., which it awards to individuals who successfully complete the CFP Board's initial and ongoing certification requirements. John Baker offers financial planning and securities through Woodbury Financial Services, Inc., a registered investment advisor and broker-dealer, member FINRA. SIPC, located at 1050 Crown Point Parkway, Suite 1675, Atlanta, Georgia, 30338. This program is for information purposes only and should not be considered a solicitation of or offer to buy or offer to sell securities or investment advisory services. Information in this program regarding market or other financial information is obtained from sources which are believed to be reliable. We do not warrant or guarantee the timeliness or accuracy of this information. When considering any registered security products, seek a prospectus carefully before you invest. Make sure you consult your financial professional regarding any specific situation. We'll be right back.